Next item on the agenda is item number 15, John Beckwith, request to license and locate a pound net in Chesapeake Bay west of Parker's Island. The proposal is protested. Mr. Travelstead, good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Let's see if we can get this.
Let's start that up.
This isn't going to be a bit so clear, but try to help orient you. Mr. Beckwith is proposing to license and locate a pound net right off of Parker's Island. This is Parker's Island here. This is on the bay side of the eastern shore. A Nancott Creek here and Pungatee Creek down here. The project has been protested by through the receipt of 15 different emails or letters complaining about the location of the net in that area, and that under Commission Regulation 25 means it must come before you for a decision. There is a copy of that regulation in your evaluation, which you may wish to refer to. The pound net is, by comparison to most, a small pound net. It's going to be 675 feet long, approximately 400 feet from shore, the shore of Parker's Island. Of course, most pound nets can be up to 1,200 feet long. It's located in about 7 or 8 feet of water. So it's by no means a deep water pound net. Of the 15 comments that we received, they were mostly of a general nature, complaining about the presence of commercial gear in the area and how it might impact recreational fishing in the area. The area previously, Mr. Beckwith had proposed to place a pound net behind Parker's Island in this area, right here. And we learned from public comment at that time that the area behind Parker's Island here is somewhat of a major thoroughfare for people moving between Nancott Creek and Pungatee Creek.
And law enforcement uses it a lot for...
As well. I mean, there's a lot of boating activity, a lot of fishing activity. And as a result, staff indicated to Mr. Beckwith that because his proposed net in this location would exceed more than 25% of the distance across this body of water, it would not meet the standards of law. And as a result, he withdrew that application. He came back shortly thereafter with the application that's now before you, and that is to locate the net here on the bay side of Parker's Island, in a relatively sandy area. The complaints that we've received are that the area around Parker's Island, behind Parker's Island, is used by small boat fishermen at night, and they're fearful that the net will cause a hazard to navigation. This is a little bit more detailed. Again, it's hard to read some of that, but the other concern was that the net would disrupt the ecology in the area. It might affect submerged aquatic vegetation. That pound nets fish 365 days a year. We know that, of course, is not the case, and will have that much more impact on recreational fishing in the area. Staff doesn't believe that the majority of these comments are substantive. They seem to be more along the lines of don't place this commercial net in an area that's not now commercial because it might affect our fishing activities. We don't think a net located on the bay side will have much effect at all on fishing behind the island where most of the SAVs are located. the area around Parker's Island is about 4 miles in circumference. So it's a fairly good distance, and it's hard to believe that a net located out here will affect fishing back behind the island. The one concern that staff does have is the SAV issue. We looked at the work of VIMS, and again, here is Parker's Island. All of these different green colors are SAVs. This is 2005, and you'll see that even on this sort of northwest shore, there were SAVs in 05. In 06, again, here's Parker's Island. Those SAVs are gone off the northwest shore. Clearly, there have been SAVs in that area. And we would prefer that a pound net not be set in the middle of an SAV bed. But that doesn't appear to be the case with Mr. Beckwith's proposal. In fact, this yellow line, which you can barely make out, is the previous SAV line. And this circle, well, that's the terminus of his net. We go from here out to here, and he is beyond the SAV line. So we think, you know, based on this, staff has no objection to siting the net in that location. At some point, SAVs may come back in that area and expand, but I think there'd be minimal disruption with the net already being there. There was one discrepancy. When Mr. Beckwith applied for this location, he provided us with a latitude and longitude for the head of the net, which is that point right there in the center of the circle. He said the net would be 675 feet, which brings you there. And then he described it as being 150 feet off the shore of Parker's Island. By our calculations from our engineers, the distance offshore is actually 440 feet. So I'm not sure if the 150 feet was merely a guesstimate on the part of Mr. Beckwith, or if he was really wed to having it 150 feet from shore. If he's wed to the 150 feet and not the latitude and longitude, it does place him inside the zone where we have seen SAVs. And so we would not recommend that. We would recommend that he stick to the latitude and longitude and the length that he provided. That puts him 440 feet offshore and beyond the SAV.
I think he's represented. We can ask counsel exactly what his intent is.
Unless you have questions, that's...
Any questions for Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question, Jack. Is recreational fishing prohibited within a certain distance of that net if it goes up?
Only if the pound netter flags his net. It's not an automatic prohibition under the regulation.
That's the old Walter Coles Burroughs regulation.
Right. Okay.
Actually, it dealt not as much with the... taking a fish around it, but getting fishing implements within the net. That was the big concern that pound netters had. They'd go to fish the net, and they would have lures and hooks right. And everything else in there. So they can... What is the distance, Jack? 250 feet? I mean, I can't... What do you remember? When they flag it?
I believe it's 125
foot.
It's very...
Jack, I was just curious, given the fact that there seemed to be some concerns from the recreational community. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Mr. Sheck?
Yeah, the water depth between the shoreline and the, that 440-foot area, what is that water depth? Do you know?
Very shallow.
It's all shallow.
If you're looking at the topographic sheets, it's on the order of 1 or 2 feet. Yeah. The head of the net, I'm told, is only 7 or 8 feet
right.
of water.
So.
The other piece of information that I left out is there previously, for a period of 1 year, was a pound net in this area. It was owned by Mr. Hayes Angle. He fished it for 1 year, And it was, it worked for him very well. I've spoken to him. He did decide to move the net from that area because it was too far away from his other nets. It was just costing him too much money and fuel to run a separate boat to that net. So he has since moved. But there is precedent for a commercial net in that area.
So as far as traffic goes, they need to be off the shore anyway because of it's relatively low water.
Can I?
Mr. Bowden.
I fished over there for too many years that I really. Parker's Island Bar, probably I draw 4 foot of water. And for me, make any time when I leave Nancott Creek, I'd have to go around 3 miles offshore. That flat comes out there. You're probably 2.5-3 miles offshore before you can consistently get 8 foot. So, you know, if you're drawing 4 foot, your boat will tend to suck down in shallow waters. Mm-hmm. It's a very large flat. It's below an Nancott Creek. It's nowhere near the buoy line going into an Nancott Creek. I mean, it's a long way from the buoy line. So I don't think you'd be obstructing traffic going into Nancott Creek.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. Any other questions for Jack? Thank you, Mr. Travelstead. The applicant here or represented, Mr. Ansley. Distinguished member of the Virginia State Bar. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Bowman. Distinguished members of the commission. My name is Neil Ansley. I'm an attorney from Virginia Beach, and I'm here today to represent the interest of Mr. Beckwith in this proposed site for PoundNet. I would first like to inform the commission on Mr. Beckwith's behalf that he has deep regret that he cannot be here today. His father is apparently in the advanced stages of emphysema and is bedridden, and some circumstances have come up that he can't leave his father unattended for the day, but he did certainly desire to be here, and I have advised him to be ready at the phone in the event that there are some questions that I can't answer, or something that comes up, and the commission would be gracious enough to grant a short continuance, or I'm saying a short recess, so that I could do that. Mr. Beckwith has been a commercial fisherman for almost 40 years in several different states. He started up north and has moved down here, and is a citizen of the Commonwealth of Virginia. As you are probably aware, he purchased a PoundNet license from an individual who was getting out of the business and has legally entered the PoundNet fisheries through the limited entry process by obtaining someone's existing license. He now requests to be able to use that license. He has proposed to put this PoundNet at latitude 37.70649 north and longitude 7585991 west. As Mr. Travelstead indicated, there was some discrepancy in what Mr. Beckwith initially thought in the distance from shore. Mr. Travelstead hit it right on the head when he said he thought maybe it was a guesstimate. My client has informed me that he did most of his measurements at different tides and was trying to come up with an idea. Obviously, he was off. After speaking with Mr. Travelstead and addressing Mr. Travelstead's concerns, particularly with the SAV, my client has indicated that he desires to go by the latitude and longitude and not by the distance from shore, and actually prefers to be further offshore, all things being considered. But that is not an issue as far as how close he is to the island, and would certainly stick with the latitude and longitude that would put him at least 400 feet off of Parker's Island. As indicated by Mr. Travelstead, the overall length of the device is 675 feet. I would like to take this opportunity now to thank Mr. Travelstead and his staff for their work on this and their favorable recommendation. As far as the SAV concern or the submerged aquatic vegetation in this area, as Mr. Travelstead pointed out, it doesn't appear that there are those beds there now. One thing is for certain, my client's gear didn't cause that. There obviously were there in the past, but we believe with prevailing what is thought to be known on the vegetation of the submerged aquatic wetlands that In the deeper water, of course, it probably wouldn't be an issue because they need light to survive, although this is a generally shallow area. But the existing charts do not show SAV going out as far as what Mr. Beckwith is proposing to put this device anyways. And Mr. Beckwith and I have actually had discussions on the SAV issue. He is also an eel potter, and he certainly understands the importance of SAV for bait preservation and fisheries management and has no desire to interfere with that and feels that this device, where located, would not do that. Secondly, to address some of the concerns from the objectors as far as boater safety or aid to navigation or obstruction to navigation, as was pointed out by one of the distinguished members of the commission, the only marked navigable channel is that of Nancott Creek. And actually, as you can see on the chart, when exiting or entering Nancott Creek, it actually veers to the north and then out, which would place it even further away from the proposed site for this pound net. We do not feel that it would be a hazard to navigation where located due, one, to the depth of the water and larger vessels needing to traverse the area further offshore. As small as the smaller vessels go, in order to follow that argument that it would be a hazard to navigation, you would have to take some assumptions. First, you would have to assume that the small boat is traversing the area at nighttime, never having traveled that area before. Otherwise, certainly they would have knowledge of the approximate location of this pound net. Also, it should be noted that unless things have changed, as far as the rules of navigation go, any time that a vessel's operator is operating a vessel in poor visibility or especially at nighttime, it is incumbent upon the vessel's operator to reduce speed and maintain a proper lookout, particularly when operating outside of marked navigable channels. If a vessel's operator is going to operate outside of marked navigable channels and they choose not to maintain a proper lookout and reduce speeds during poor visibility, particularly at nighttime, to be quite frank, they're putting themselves and their crew at risk no matter where they are in the bay, because they're just as likely to hit a duck blind, a mooring buoy, or any number of fixed objects that are located in the bay. The point being that we feel if the rules of navigation are followed and people use due care and regard that they are supposed to use when operating a vessel, this device where located will not pose any danger to the boating public. Finally, the concerns primarily seem to be that of conservation. And it is my understanding that this area is used by recreational fishermen. Mostly, it appears from what I gather in looking at the area and being a fisherman myself, it appears their concerns are that of the species, in particular, red drum and speckled trout. The gear that we are requesting to put at this site, I would like to remind the commission, currently is legal gear. It's a gear that has been approved by the commission, by the legislature, and it is lawful gear for catching finfish in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And this gear will be fished in a lawful manner and adhere to all the laws and regulations of the Commonwealth in doing so, all the conservation laws. As Mr. Travelstead indicated in his presentation, this is passive gear as compared to other types of gear such as hall seines and gill nets, where in a pound net bycatch or unwanted bycatch can be released alive, most of the time the mortality rates amongst other gear are much higher. In fact, my client, after discussing this with him, has indicated that he has every intention of culling his fish at the pound instead of loading in the boat, taking to the dock, and then culling. This would allow any unwanted fish to be released, and anybody who has any familiarity with pound nets, which I'm sure the commission does, knows that the mortality rate of one unwanted fish would be much less. My client has absolutely no regard and has relayed to me that he has no regard in killing fish that he does not intend to use, and that's the purpose that he culls at the actual head of the net. And I think that would also alleviate quite a bit of the concerns from what I saw proposed by the objectors in their letters. Also, as far as the two species mentioned in most of the letters go, I think that a look at the numbers would indicate that pound nets historically do not catch these species at the alarming rate that may be relayed. Numbers that I obtained from the Fisheries Management Division for this agency indicated that in last year, pound netters statewide caught 407 pounds of red drum and only 11 pounds of speckled trout. That's opposed to halcyon catches that were over 1,000 pounds of red drum and halcyons that were over 26,000 pounds of speckled trout. As you can see, in comparison to other gears, this device, the concern that this device is going to deplete the species in this particular area is not founded. And to that end, we have great faith in the Fisheries Management Division and this agency that if a particular area or a particular device is depleting the resource, it will be addressed through regulation to be applied statewide, but certainly not on an individual basis through a permitting process such as we are here for today. I guess in closing, I would like to comment that, and after reading a lot of these letters and having heard much of these same arguments most of my life, there seems to be this misconception among some that a commercial waterman and a conservationist or have a mind for conservation. And that is not the case, and it is certainly not the case with Mr. Beckwith after having spoke with him countless hours over the last week or so on this matter. He started working the water when he was 9 years old. He has continued to do this for almost 40 years. In that time, he has never received a violation for a conservation matter. I think that speaks volumes as to his commitment and his belief in preservation and conservation. This is the only means that he has and understands and wants to do to provide for his family. He purchased his license in good faith that he would be able to use it, and he has proceeded through this process and comes before you now by application asking that you follow staff's recommendation and our request to approve this site. As far as the concerns and Mr. Beckwith's emphasis in conservation, I leave you with this rhetorical question, and that is, if the fish stocks do decline, particularly in this area, who amongst us before you here today would have more to lose than he? He does not want to do anything that is going to damage his fisheries in the immediate or distant future. I thank the Commission for your time. We hope that you will adopt staff's recommendation and our request, and I'll be glad to answer any questions anybody may have.
Any questions from the Commission for Mr. Ansley? Thank you, Mr. Ansley.
Thank you, sir.
Anyone else in support of this application? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
State your name for the record, please.
My name is Pat Hirsch. Thank you for this opportunity to talk. I've lived on the Eastern Shore for...
Mr. Hirsch, I need to swear you in. This is a case decision. Thank you, Carl. You solemnly swear a testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth except for God.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Proceed.
Thank you, Carl. I've lived on the Eastern Shore for over 20 years and currently own a home off of Nancock Creek, the first creek in on Parker's Creek. I'm very fortunate to say that I've either lived or worked on the water my entire life. I've commercially gill netted, crab scraped, crab dredge as a mate, peeler potted, and potted for hard crabs, as well from Maryland to the Eastern Shore for over 20 years. If anything, I'm pro-commercial. mostly because of my upbringing, and a lot of my friends are still active watermen, mostly ex-watermen. I have nothing against pound nets, nor the applicant. I simply think this day and age of what we are currently experiencing with dwindling stocks of fish and crabs, especially this part of the bay, we aren't close where we aren't close to the mouth of the bay where we have an influx of water, is simply not the time nor the place to allow pound net. I don't consider this a recreational versus a commercial issue, but simply a conservation issue, where hopefully both sides will benefit in the long run by not allowing this type of operation. Please keep in mind, pound nets do not discriminate, but merely catch everything in its path. I'm really concerned overall of all fisheries because of what I've seen and I'm currently seeing today. I bought my home on the creek in October 98 and had four pots on my dock. I could catch all I wanted and more. I can no longer do that. I've got to put five more additional pots out in the creek with my recreational license. The creek used to be full of commercial pots all year round. Not anymore. Very few pots. It's amazing. It's very sad to see it. I used to fish alongside Mr. Bowden with the likes of Bobby Bates, Diddy Mouse, God rest his soul, Sam Swift, Donnie Miles, Steve Bunce, Vonnie Pruitt, and Sonny Bennett when we used to deck load our boats with spot using 2 7/8 webbing. Those and catch numerous large gray trout, but those days are long gone. The days of catching toadfish are over. Where are the horseshoe crabs, bay oysters, clams, turtles, and even eels? These good old days have been long gone. I don't want to stand here like I'm an Al Gore, but there's a telling story out there. If we don't start consistently thinking about the future of the bay to protect our resources, I'm afraid it's going to be too late. My snapshot view of the bay spans over 30 years, and I wish this area could support a pound net, but it simply cannot. I do hope in the future that maybe this area could support 10-pound nets. From what I understand from my waterman sources that Mr. Beckwith is new to the Eastern Shore, does he really understand how sensitive this area is with all the adjacent SAVs, I think you call them? And to me, that says it all with all the grass beds. That's right, the crab's great. And it's dwindling. That's sad as well. Does he really depend on the water? Is he a full-time waterman? If he is, my hat's off to him, and I wish him well. Watermen are simply a dying breed these days. I believe safety is also an issue for this pound net, mainly because of the growth we're experiencing on the shore and the boating traffic between the Nancock and Punkateague Creeks. The new waterfront homes and communities that are sprouting up are people that come to the shore to boat and fish and hunt. And a lot of these boaters are inexperienced and do not know the shallows of the shore and the navigational hazard this pound net will cause. Case in point, just last Thursday, coming into San Shoal Inlet, 2 miles out in the ocean, I'm approaching the inlet, Out Beacon, and I rescued a pontoon boat out there from North Carolina, a blind man and his 80-year-old wife, and I guess it was their daughter and son-in-law. And I towed him in the oyster. It took us 2.5 hours. Obviously, they were inexperienced. So we talk about the channels going in and out of Punkateague and in Nancock. They're for deep water vessels. The majority of recreational boaters on the Eastern Shore are shallow type boats because that's what we have over there is shallow waters. And I do dispute the amount of water near that pound net, but that was followed by Mr. Bowden's comment, and you're accurate, you're dead on. So that must be considered as far as a hazard out there in that area. I do fish that area. I'm also concerned about this immediate area because of how sensitive it is in the grass beds and around these three islands, Scarborough's Island, Finnis Island, Parker's Island, and the food source it provides for various species. It serves as breeding and spawning grounds for a lot of fish, a lot of species. Gray trout are just about gone. crabs and other species are simply not worth the fish for anymore.
Mr. Hirsch, the stock assessment information you've given to us a couple different times now about the dearth and the dire straits they're in. Can we move on to your to the gravamen of your objection?
I'm just about to.
Thank you.
How many people are going to be served by allowing this pound net? One man, one person or family versus how many people will be served by not allowing this net? Many for years to come. In closing, I was the first local angler that broke the world record for the blue line tilefish. At the time of my catch, the state did not recognize the species. Soon after, the state added the tilefish to the saltwater program, and krill limits were enacted for tilefish and grouper for a fishery that's 50 miles offshore. I applaud the commission for these proactive efforts and can only conclude that these limits were set for conservation efforts, and I hope you make the same consideration when voting on this application.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch.
Thank you.
Anyone else an objection? Mr. Enzo, did you want any time to wrap up or?
Yes, I could.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Members of the commission, first of all, again, on the conservation issue, if this area is in such dire straits or precarious condition that lawful fishing means cannot be deployed there, then this commission may need to look at conducting studies or maybe closing it to all fishing and establish a management area. However, in the interim, my client should still be allowed to work there until such time as this commission would or would not take that sort of action. To do otherwise would leave Mr. Beckwith with a license on the shore staring out over this area as people continue to gillnet, haul seine, peeler scrape, and recreational fish, and him not being allowed to use his lawful gear in this area. It certainly does not seem and would not be an equitable solution. As far as the boating safety issues go, we need only look to this side of the bay for case studies, if you will. I would dare to say that Lynn Haven Inlet is probably the most heavily traversed area in the Commonwealth for recreational boat traffic. Just to the east of the mouth of Lynn Haven Inlet, as you are aware, is a large fishing pier and four pound nets. I'm not aware of any catastrophic daily events that occur as far as boating accidents and things with people traversing that area. Again, if the rules of navigation are followed and people operate their boats at nighttime in a proper and responsible manner, we do not feel that this will be an issue. Finally, in closing, I would like to comment on the comment just made about who would benefit from this license. And this is something that I've heard repeatedly throughout my career, and that is that only one person would benefit. Well, that is making a large assumption. That is assuming that everybody in this Commonwealth, who these waters belong to, everyone in this Commonwealth, not just us here in Tidewater, that is assuming that everyone in this Commonwealth can grab a fishing pole, load their boat up, and go catch speckled trout for their dinner. That's not the case. The people in Southwest Virginia, the people in Bath County, have just as much right to fresh Virginia seafood as those who live here on the bay who can catch it themselves. And that's what this commission is here to ensure can happen. Particularly in this day and age where we have imports of seafood that are causing illness and disease, people have a right to have fresh Virginia seafood. How do they get it? Well, they get it from people like Mr. Beckwith, someone who's conservation-minded but continues to provide for his family and also distribute seafood, Virginia seafood, throughout the Commonwealth and throughout the country. We hope that you will approve this so Mr. Beckwith can get to work. He's already missed a great deal of this fishing season, and he has felt the stress and strain of that. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ensley. Any further questions I should have asked before, Mr. Ensley? Oh. Matters before the commission for action. Mr. Bowden.
I want to make a few comments.
Yes, sir.
I don't really recognize this gentleman. Maybe he knows me. This does look familiar, I will say that. We're kind of in a dilemma on the Eastern Shore. You have people like me whose families have lived there when Virginia was a colony, wasn't even a state. And in my case, much before that, we should have had better immigration laws when it came to Jamestown. We won't be dealing with problems we deal with now. But At any rate, I mean, you know, what do you do? Do you take somebody who's doing a traditional user, using a traditional gear, that's been doing it for hundreds of years? Naturally, not this one individual, because he would be have longevity. There would be no doubt in that. And displace them because you have an influx of people who want to use another thing. I don't feel that way. I feel like they're compatible. I'm very familiar with Hayes Angle. We're personal friends. And when he had the fish trap there, mainly what he worked on were flounder and large croakers. The commercial side on flounder is heavily regulated. We have a 200,000-pound in-state limit. I believe it's still that. When that breached is closed, the commercial sector, if it does go over, they pay back a pound for every pound they go over. We've not had any trouble with that. The recreational sector has been over sometimes almost double. So the conservation argument, I don't think, is really there. It's more or less a user group conflict. And, you know, there's certain areas that's been set aside. As far as Red Drum, nobody would put a fish trap there for Red Drum. You're allowed three fish, 18 to 27 inches. You would starve to death if you ate what you caught, and I alone tried to sell it and live off of them. So I don't think it's really a conservation issue. I just think it's you know, a user conflict area. I think it's blown up out of proportion. There's been, you know, it was stated Mr. Angle had a fish trap there. There was fish traps there years ago. I've sailed by them for a good while. There was one further out on the bar right in front of Funkatig Creek, and it was almost out to the edge, and that one was there for years. There was one up below Stone Rock and stuff probably prior to when you came to Jerry Frank Pruitt had from Tangier. I mean, there have been fish traps on that side of the bay, but generally they are clustered to the lower mouth of the bay, but there have been ones up there. He's only going to be able to fish this in a law-abiding manner. If not, he'll be subject to whatever penalties apply to anybody in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So I really can't see a navigation problem. You're probably very familiar with the area. When you cut through the Nancock Creek, you're going through the inside if the tide's up. And if not, I think you'd have most of the people who's familiar with the area. So I do have a tendency to grant this permit and take staff recommendation when it comes time. I'd like to make a motion.
Yes, sir. Anyone else? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to speak to a couple of issues. I appreciate the concerns that have been raised by the protestants, but I originally, when I read this, had some concerns about the navigation issues, but staff has indicated that this will not create, in their opinion, a hazard in navigation, and indicated that the original site on the other side of the island was probably more hazardous or more of a thoroughfare for small boats. Furthermore, on the management issue, there's no evidence that that there's a discrete fisheries management problem in that area, or that there's a discrete population of fish at the local level that need additional management protection. Like Ernie pointed out, all these species are under some sort of management regulations here in the Commonwealth. Having said that, I would also support it.
Any further comment? Now, just two quick observations. Number one, pertaining to the stocks in that area. I've known Mr. Travelstead since I've been here in 1992, and I've never known him to recommend the placement of a device in an area that would deplete a stock. Conversely, he's significantly conservation-minded. Some would say at times, I would think, to a fault. I don't agree with that, but anyway. The other thing is pursuant to Section 28.2203 of the Code of Virginia, it specifically states that conservation and management measures shall not discriminate among user groups. I think we have to be very mindful of that as we make this decision today. So with that, the matter is before the Commission. Mr. Bowden.
I make a motion that we accept staff recommendation and grant him a permit.
Second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Holland. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Stensley, good to see you. I wasn't going to prejudice your presentation, but those that don't know, Mr. Inslee is a former Marine police officer here and has done well by going on, furthering his studies, and has become a respected member of the Virginia State Bar. So proud to have you here before the commission.
I prefer my office to be out on the bay.
That's your own doing.
Right.
Have a good day.
Blame myself.
Yep, have a good day. Next item is recommendations of the Recreational Fishing Advisory Board. She's got the house, Sonia.
Yep.
I only have one recommendation from the Recreational Fishing Advisory Board. The other projects will continue on until November. At this time, we're requesting $400,000 for the artificial reef program to assist with the deployment of concrete material on the various bay reefs. Any particular questions?
Are we okay procurement-wise, Jane? Not that I don't doubt you, but I always want to check with the lady controls the money. Discussion by the commission?
Where are you going to put it? On every
place. I believe Mike has plans for a wide variety of the various.